Bartók's first sonata for violin and piano. It was played by Christian Tetzlaff and Lars Vogt, ending their Proms chamber music recital at the Cadogan Hall last Monday. And the presenter was Catherine Bott. Well, in an hour's time, Alan Shipton will be here with Jazz Library, and we'll be hearing an interview he recorded in 1996 with the bassist Ray Brown. And then Geoffrey Smith will be here with Jazz Record Requests starting at 5 o'clock. But now it's a minute after three and time for World Roots with Lucy Duran.
Hello. In today's programme, a special report from the world's newest country. South Sudan finally declared its independence in July after a long civil war. Robin Denslow has travelled there, and we'll be hearing the music that he recorded together with his colleague Angela Impey, as well as the extraordinary stories of some of the musicians. But before heading to East Africa, I've music from the west of the continent. In the World Roots studio is the great Malian vocalist Oumou Sangaré and her band. That was Kuna Dia by Oumou Sangare from Mali, performed in the World Roots studio with her nine-piece band. They'll be playing again later, and I'll also be talking with Oumou. On July 9th this year, South Sudan officially gained independence from Sudan. For 22 years, Sudan was embroiled in a brutal civil war until the Comprehensive Peace Agreement of 2005. This agreement allowed for a referendum on independence, which took place in January this year. An overwhelming 99% of southern Sudanese voted for independence. Shortly after the official celebrations in July, Robin Denslow travelled to the new country to hear some of its music and meet some of the musicians.
It's a sweltering hot African afternoon, and the Atek Kilwak Orphans Choir are rehearsing outdoors in the suburbs of Juba, now the capital of the world's newest state, South Sudan. There are nine children here, some lost their parents in the war and some to disease, and they're gathered in the shade of a half-completed breeze-blocked house. Behind us, the green hills slope down towards the Nile. Juba's a pleasant little town, doesn't really feel like a capital city yet, but it's had a violent history. South Sudan gained independence in July after the longest civil war in Africa, as the predominantly Christian South broke away from the Muslim North. When I last came here in the 90s, there was fighting close by. Today I've come to learn about the culture and the music of South Sudan, where everyone I met was thrilled by independence, and where the Orphans Choir sang me their new national anthem.
Oh God, we praise and glorify you for your great for South Sudan, land of great abundance, upon us united in peace and harmony.
Music has a special role in South Sudan, both because of its rich cultural tradition and because songs played an important part in the civil war. I'm in the Ministry of Culture, where the Minister Chanson Chang told me that the long fight for independence was very much a war between cultures.
Culture and music were at their highest peak during the war, practiced by southern artists as a way of influencing the resolve of freedom fighters in the South, especially taking into consideration that the war between North and South was mainly waged on cultural issues. The North, after the independence in 1956, tried to subdue the South through the spread of Arabic culture through Islamic mechanism.
And now you have independence, which is a great achievement,
yes.
But there are still many challenges ahead. Can music still play a role in trying to fight some of those challenges?
Yeah, music is part of human life, and it will never go away in any society. And therefore, if it was directed for the liberation struggle, now it should be directed for peace building.
The most important traditional music of South Sudan centres around cattle songs or ox songs, which can be heard at cattle camps like this one at Num Diang, way out in the bush beyond Juba. It's just getting dark and I'm surrounded by over 1,000 exquisite long-horned and mostly white cattle. For the Dinka and other pastoral communities, cattle mean everything. They're the source of pride and wealth. You can't get married without paying a dowry of up to 200 cows. Men sing to their favourite ox, given to them when they come of age, and a symbol of all that's good and important to them. The songs can be praise songs, personal songs, or songs of criticism, and can deal with the history of a family or a nation. The ox hears them first, but the songs are sung to the community, or released on cassettes and sent to family members around the world. I've come to Num Diang with Bol Deng, a famous wartime songwriter and still a member of the army, who's singing to his favourite ox, a wonderful black and white one in front of me here.
Young Oburud join with the Nagwil, Kubaga Mata, Kubaga Long Lil, Pinyatoganin, Makuya, Ajayan Kwanda Jabatonga Kwanda, Pinyapiather in Gagwil, Makuika Chi Bura Gir Jariel, Pinyading Nerin Gagwil Gokok, Makuya, Ajayan Kwanda Jabatonga Kwanda, Pinyapiather in Gagwil. Aburadam Gadan Wan Chi, Yoloi Gagwil. Can I guarantee that the Arjujika Chibagam till a dear moja to Dolache Jal? Oberood join with the Nagwil, Bagamada, Kubagalung, Lil, Pinyatoganin, Makuya, Ajijan, Kwanda Jabatonga, Kwanda, Pinyapiather in Gagwil, Makuika Chibura Gair Chariel, Pinyading Nerin Gagwil Gokok, Makuya, Chijan, Kwanda Jabatonga, Kwanda, Pinyapiather in Gagwil. Quake a chibura gir jariel, pinya ding nerin gagwil gokok, makwea, a yijan quanda jabatonga quanda, pinya piather in gagwil.
That was Lieutenant Peter Boulding singing to his black and white ox Makwe in a cattle camp in the bush outside Juba, where, as you can hear, we're surrounded by over 1,000 cattle. Boulding, what exactly were you singing about there?
He's singing about his ox, Makwe, is a black and white ox, and his message is passed through Makwe to his people that he is intending to instruct.
So that's the ox in front of us here, a very beautiful beast. And what exactly is he singing to the ox? I mean, how is the message going through the ox?
The message
in the song to Makwe, addressed to Makwe, and goes to the people. The first person addressed in Makwe in the first song is a lady, and is instructing Makwe not to be married off for a lady who is like a cat, moving from one house to another house and, you know, behaving in a queer way. That lady must be a permanent lady that will last forever. And that lady, in the second message, will be like Agwil. Agwil is his grandmother, great-grandmother, who was alone, and she produced 6 heads of clans, actually.
What do cattle and oxen mean to you?
In cattle, we have a lot of advantages. We get everything through cattle. We get milk to support our lives. We get butter for our health. We get we use them for marriages, we use them for prestige, we use them for sacrifices and for many other purposes, for meat and the rest of it. So it's part of us, part of our culture, of course. It makes us stay together.
John Penangong, who kindly translated Boldeng for us, works on the Dinka Language and Song Project for Edinburgh University and the School of Oriental and African Studies in London.
Cattle songs are more of the culture and history of the family. You know, we don't have books to record the family lineage and the generations that have passed, but they are stored in the song. There was a song about Agwil counting up to the 6th generation in the cattle camp that Bull sang before. I have annotated that song, so I translated and annotated on our program. And the importance of that is I have even known now about the family line from the song.
Now, in West Africa, of course, the griots were custodians of the nation's history and the stories of the families. Here it seems that everyone is their own personal griot.
Well, yes, that is one unique thing with us. Songs are for everyone. Everyone in a family, each member of a family must have a song. So that it's one way of communication.
Boldeng sings cattle songs, but he first became famous during the war years for his songs encouraging the fighters. And for these, he plays the Rebaba lyre. We're now inside his mud and thatched hut, and he's going to sing one of those wartime songs, The Land of Sudan.
Thank you.
That was The Land of Sudan by Lieutenant Boldeng, accompanying himself on the Rebaba. And he's wearing an SPLA cap. And the SPLA, of course, were the rebel army who fought for the independence of the new South Sudan. Boldeng, how important was music during the war? How important were songs like these?
Yeah, the role of songs during the war, they were the only source of courage to the people. There was nothing that motivated people during war, the soldiers. So we used to sing, and we call it a salary. That was a salary, the incentives we gave to the soldiers to go to war and get courage. It was part of our tradition. If people are going for war, they recite poetry, they sing war songs so that they gain courage and then momentum to win.
And is there a connection between the cattle songs, the ox songs you were singing earlier, and the war songs?
It's a continuation, they're the same in our culture. Cattle is associated with war. So we used to sing songs of bravery, songs of courage, of heroism to protect our cattle. The same thing, we actually graduated from there to protecting our land, singing songs about our land, which is the same song with the cattle. So everything here is related because it is the same protection of cattle, protection of land, and claiming our rights.
For the cattle song, you're of course singing unaccompanied, but here you're playing the rebaba, which is a wonderful instrument constructed from wood with wire strings and a metal resonator bowl at the bottom. Tell me about that.
Yeah, the first advantage of this instrument is during the war it was not heavy, it was portable. I can carry it with my gun, and it also gave me courage. And whenever I sit, I don't think about other things. I go for it and begin to sing. It's part of what I use for composing songs. Without it, songs cannot come well.
Religion played a crucial role in the fight for South Sudan, and though there are still mosques in Juba, there are far more churches, like the Emmanuel Dinka Church, where the Joel Wally H Choir, and that means "Look on us, O God," are rehearsing. It's a choir that started in the war years, and it's famous for mixing religious songs with songs that encourage the fighters, like Mukyi Pio, "Be Courageous." Mukyi Pio, "Be Courageous," written back in the war years by the choir's best-known singer, Mary Aluel, and now a song known across South Sudan. Now, you became very famous for writing songs of prophecy, predicting what would happen and predicting that there would be independence.
Yes, I was both to encourage Christian on the behalf of the Christian who fighting the devil and the soldiers who fighting the enemy.
When did you start writing songs?
I started writing song in 1984.
And your songs now are sung in churches across Sudan?
Yes, across Sudan, especially in Dinka language. So the Christian songs and the to encourage soldiers, they are known over the whole southern Sudan.
Now, many singers I know in South Sudan, if they write a song, it becomes their personal property. They are the only people who can sing it. But you are special because you have given your songs to the church. Is that right?
I gave the songs to the church because it was not my own songs. They came from the Lord passing through my mind to give it to the people. So it was not my... I gave them to the choir. We have a group. It's called Jerwaliyej. So I gave the songs to them so that we may sit together and correct the song, and then they can take it to the churches to be sung. Because these are God's songs. They are not mine.
So you don't feel that you wrote these songs? You feel they were just given to you?
I feel just when they came, there is a spirit which came at that time to have these songs. So when they came in my mind, I knew in my heart they are not mine.
Songs celebrating South Sudan's independence are being played right across the country at the moment, and some of the most popular come from the remarkable Gordon Kong. He was born blind in a village near the Ethiopian border and moved to Ethiopia during the war. Since then, he's travelled widely across Sudan, and despite his disability, he learned to play and even make his own rababa. This is his song, South Sudan. Gordon Kong with South Sudan, a song he's singing in Juba Arabic. Gordon, why do you choose to sing and indeed speak in Juba Arabic rather than Nuer? What's the attraction of Juba Arabic for you?
I'm saying this is the time to combine all the tribes of South Sudan, and they don't speak my language. They've been divided up during the war, and now it's time to unite the people. So there's only one common language, which is Arabic Juba, and that's what I'm using to unite the rest of the tribes to get my message of peace so that they come together as one nation.
And the instrument you're using is a rababa, which is like a lyre made of wood with metal strings. And you have six strings. It's a very special sort of rababa.
Since he was young, he started assembling metals and sticks and string, the six strings. And he's used to that. That is like his own musical instrument. He doesn't use any other one. And they produce the sounds he wants in his song, the music that he's singing today.
But you've been blind since birth. How did you teach yourself music, teach yourself to play rababa?
Since he was born, blind. He has never seen what a world looks like. So he grew up and then he joined the Red Army. The Red Army, the child soldiers who were taken to Ethiopia and the rest of the places that you hear about. And when they were singing, when they are making their morale, he asked for permission to go near the instruments. Then he would be touching at the instruments, feeling them, seeing how they are made. Then after that, he would go and struggle to make his own. This is how he came up with his own songs. Then he actually understood from the Jesh Amr music and the rababat, the guitars from the Jesh Amr, the Red Army. From there, he was able to make his own, compose his own songs. And that's a gift from God because he didn't know he would make it. So he's now going to translate the whole ideas from himself through the guitar to the people to bring peace. And that is God's gift to him.
And so you created instruments simply by touching other instruments, although you couldn't see them. You managed to put them together. That's extraordinary.
The six stringed instrument like this is what I created, and it produces all my sounds and the songs that I want.
And we're going to hear one of your other new songs, One South. Thank you.
dal nalil ijibja jagrera masira le jabe yinnu dal watona yinnu bal ades ya yama ardi dabitana shuklonu mashimalona nina watal nalil ijibja jagrera masira le jabe yinnu dalwatana yinnu bal ades ya yama ardi dabitana shuklonu mashimalona nina watal nalil ijibja jagrera masira le jabe yinnu dalwatana yinnu bal ades ya yama ardi dabitana shuklonu mashimalona ha bie dawatona chalalo fijeran gai togo dawaton ta denkanga ya yama mind you kalam kelesika dabalenna fi
Until now, there have been very few professional women singers in South Sudan, though thankfully that seems likely to change with independence. Selina Kukwa is an exception. She was brought up just over the border in Uganda. Her mother had gone there to escape the fighting, but she's lived in different parts of South Sudan for over 30 years now. She's a traditional healer, a midwife and an athlete, and has sung on radio and television, and she's now a recording artist since the first studio opened here in Juba 2 years ago. She's with me in the hall of the Neokoron Cultural Centre, the main music venue in Juba, and she's playing a traditional women's instrument, the adungu. And with bells attached to her ankles, Selina, you're going to play a song, Anjo, which is, I think, happy song, is that right?
Happy song, yes.
Happy song. So let me ask you a little bit about this remarkable instrument you're playing, the adungu. It's like a little harp with wires stretched across a bent piece of wood, which is balanced inside the shell of a gourd. And you're playing it, I see, with the finger of your right hand and the thumb of your left hand, and also using your chin on the top string to change the notes. It's remarkable. This is a traditional instrument, is it?
Yeah, this one is a traditional instrument for the ladies. Man cannot play this yadungu.
Just for the ladies?
Only just for the ladies only.
And I see you move your chin while you're playing, so the chin goes over the strings.
This chip is changing bass.
You use the chin on the top of the string to change the...
Yeah, it is changing bass.
To change the note.
To change the note, it brought the music out.
Very complicated.
This chip is brought the music out. Yeah.
There have been very few women singers in South Sudan. What was it like for you before independence, when Juba was under the control of Khartoum?
We are women are singing about our suffering, number one. Number one, singing, we are entertain, encourage our people to go to front line. Ilikomati nyirobi diamatoya, malia mundo alizarian, ngazira mundo vogaterera dule. Ilikomati nyirobi diamat, malia mundo alizarian. This is a song women start to sing because they are going to, when the people are going to frontline, you are going to sing and people are going to the war. You will be strong when you are singing.
So these were songs then that the authorities didn't really know about. They were sung privately and quietly in the villages to encourage the young people to go and join the rebels.
We are singing there. This Gudalaba cannot listen because this is our songs for the encouraging boys to fight.
The new South Sudan has attracted back thousands of so-called lost boys, those who fled the country for their own safety and have now returned. Among them, there's Emmanuel Kembe, who's been living in the States and plays a style that mixes anything from reggae to Congolese influences. I'm joined by Emmanuel now in Juba's Kay's studio, where he recorded his new song, Celebrate. Now, you fled the country way back in the 90s and have just come back. Why did you have to leave?
Well, back in 94, I sang a song called Shen Shen. Shen is a slang in Juba Arabic, means ugly. It tells about the actual war situation in South Sudan. That song was interpreted by the Sudan security as inciting Southern Sudanese for war.
Were they right?
The song tells about the actual war situation. It has nothing to encourage people for war, but the song also gives hopes that one day peace will come to Sudan. And because of that song, I was arrested for 29 days. That's one of the reasons I had to flee the country. I walked to Ethiopia. I applied for refugee status. I lived in Ethiopia as a refugee for 3 years. Also, I had the privilege to visit SPLA, Sudan People Liberation Army, to give a moral performance in Southern Blue Nile. That was in 98, before my departure to the United States.
Many African states, of course, are now very well known in the West because of their music. Do you think South Sudan could become one of those states?
Well, in South Sudan, we have about 67 tribes. So we also want to make use of this cultural diversity to contribute to the economy and development of the country. Now, as we are free people in South Sudan, I believe South Sudan will be in the music map very soon.
In South Sudan, music is more than just entertainment. It played a crucial role in the war years and helped to bring longed-for independence. Now the world's newest country faces major problems of security and trying to establish unity in a region that's been bitterly divided for generations. Can songs help achieve that? The musicians here certainly think so.
I'm so cool.
That was Celebrate by Emmanuel Kembe, ending Robin Denslow's feature on the music of South Sudan, Africa's newest country. And you can listen again to that feature via the Radio 3 website. This is BBC Radio 3, and you're listening to World Roots with me, Lucy Duran. More music now from today's studio guest, Umu Sangare. She's in the World Roots studio with her current nine-piece band, which, alongside drums, electric guitars and flute, also includes the distinctive sound of the eight-string youth harp known as Kamelengoni. This is a new unreleased song of Umu Sangare called Kende Kende. Thank you. Umu Sangare, right here in the World Roots studio with us, with her band. And that was the song Kende Kende, which is a new song, a new song in your repertoire. So we are the first to hear this. Mm. One of the things about your music, Umu, is that the message is very important for you. Music is supposed to be beautiful and entertaining, but the words are really, really important. Tell us about the importance of words in your music.
D'accord. Le message est très, très important. Parce que
the message is very, very important because when I release a new album, people say, oh, what is she going to say this time? Each time I make a new album, people think, she has said everything. She won't be able to make another album better than this. So the lyrics are very famous, and for me, they are primordial.
And what more can you say? Because a lot of your songs are about the problems that women face in Malian society and around the world. I mean, is this still something that you're very inspired by? Is this the struggle of women?
Je ne peux pas m'arrêter avec ça.
I can't stop writing about that because it's me. It's my story. I'm a woman and I was a girl who suffered at home. So as long as I'm coming to terms with that, I can't stop writing about it. I only want to say that the fight with men has now diminished because I see progress in my society. Today, the head of government in Mali is a woman. It's a woman who governs Mali today.
C'est une femme qui gouverne le Mali aujourd'hui.
But your song, Kende Kende, that you've just sung, is actually advising young girls to behave themselves.
Voilà.
Kende Kende talks about women who are letting go. Now that I'm a spokesperson for women, I find myself obliged to give them advice. A girl should respect herself.
Umu, the other thing that's really, really important and that I always hear in your music is your connection with a part of Mali that you originally come from, Wassoulou, that wonderful, very remote, very beautiful region that I've been lucky enough to visit with you. So tell us about Wassoulou music and why it still inspires you.
Comme c'est une vieille tradition dans le Wassoulou.
It's an old tradition in Wassoulou that music accompanies a message. As long as I have a message, then I'm inspired by Wassoulou all the time. There, if a woman has something to say, she will sing at a ceremony without a microphone. She'll ask permission first, then she'll sing. She'll unburden herself and express herself with such force that everyone will be moved to tears. I can't get away from the music of Wassoulou. I'm too inspired by it.
Thank you. Arogenyoni umunalea kabo wasolo.
That was Umu Sangare really going back to her Wasulu roots, just singing with the Kamelengoni, the wonderful harp, the youth harp of Wasulu, and the djembe drum. And that was the song Mawa Chekanying. Mawa is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to hear you sing like that. You really take us to the deep countryside of Wasulu, Umu.
In fact, I'm always trying to please women. That's an old song sung in Wasulu. Straight away, as soon as you asked me to sing a traditional song, I thought of that one. It tells women to be proud to be women. In the villages, it is often sung to the most beautiful woman, to excite the others. Because for me, there are no ugly women. A woman is everything. So the song is to excite all the women, to make them want to be beautiful.
D'être belle. Voilà.
Umu, your last album, Sea, which had a Grammy nomination and has some fabulous songs on it. There is one song on it that I really love, and it actually sings about the griots, and that's the one that's called Iyojeli. So tell us about that song.
Iyojeli, c'est une chanson.
Iyojeli is a song sung by an old griot woman, very important in Wasulu. But in her time, there was no radio or television, so she never really achieved fame. So when my mother talked constantly about her, I said, find me one of her songs. So I heard that song a lot and thought, good, I'll transform it. I took it and arranged it and dedicated it to the old woman. Iyojeli, it's a way to immortalize Djekani Djeli.
C'est une manière de immortaliser Djekani Djeli.
Thank you.
Iyo Jeli, a homage to the wise female griot from the 1960s called Jekani Jeli, performed by Umu Sangare and her band from Mali. And that track is also on Umu's last album, Sea. Well, from next week, World Roots will be at its new time of 10 o'clock on Sunday evening. So please join me a week tomorrow when I'll be visiting the island of Sri Lanka to hear its diverse musical traditions, from Sinhalese ritual drumming to the dances brought over centuries ago by the Portuguese and still performed by the little-known Berger community.
World Roots was presented by Lucy Duran and the producer was Sam Hickling. If you enjoyed today's report from South Sudan, you can hear many World Roots reports from all over the world by heading to the world music pages of the Radio 3 website.
The prom season may be almost over, but the show-stopping performances continue all year round on BBC Radio 3. Classical concerts from across the UK and beyond every weeknight. Continuing with coverage from the 2011 Edinburgh International Festival. Eagerly awaited performances from the likes of Carita Matila, Pierre-Laurent Aimard, Roger Norrington and René Jacobs. Radio 3 in concert returns Monday night at 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
Jazz Record Requests with Geoffrey Smith is at 5 o'clock, but now at 4, it's time for Jazz Library, and here's Alan Shipton.
This week, Jazz Library looks back at the career of a bassist who seemed to be in on the ground floor for a whole sequence of innovative moments in jazz, Ray Brown. This is Ray Brown's own piece, Baseball, recorded by his trio with guitarist Herb Ellis and drummer Stan Levy in 1957, and it comes from the 2-CD set The Man, his complete recordings under his own name from 1946 to 59 on Fresh Sound. Ray Brown died in 2002 at the age of 76, but 6 years before that he spent several days with me recording his life story for Radio 3. And from those interviews, only part of which were broadcast at the time, today's programme focuses on some of his key recordings. And we begin with the first really significant band he joined, the Dizzy Gillespie Sextet, which went to California in the winter of 1945-6, and which made some remarkable live recordings for the AFRS, the American Forces Radio Service. In many jazz histories, it was the arrival of this band at Billy Berg's club in Los Angeles that's regarded as the moment when bebop became a national phenomenon.
Part of the press was saying Dizzy started bebop, and other parts said Charlie Parker started bebop. And then a few said Monk started it. Actually, everybody had a finger in the pot, you know. But they insisted on having somebody that they could say did it. I never saw Dizzy and Charlie Parker fighting. And Charlie was in had a lot of problems with heroin, you know, which he'd had since he was about 14 years old. But I never heard two guys play that well together.
It just fit.
Well, yeah, just like a glove and a hand, you know. They sounded like one horn. If somebody could put one mouthpiece on two horns and play it at the same time, that's what they sounded like.